Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Crypto. With us today, we have Michael Senna, CEO of ThreeBox. ThreeBox is an open source data storage solution. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Just got to the sports castle a few minutes ago, and it's already almost full, so it's great.
Yeah, so I had to had somebody help find Michael because he has so much going on. It's a crazy day, first day of Ethereum Denver. So we'll get to your background at the end of the podcast. To get to the point, can you tell us about what is ThreeBox and what are you trying to accomplish?
So ThreeBox has quite an ambitious mission. We basically want to enable users to control their data and personal content regardless of which application platform they're using. And so really what that looks like at the end of the day is we can create these magic moments for both developers and users that sort of make apps easier to build and more enjoyable and efficient for individuals.
So ThreeBox is a solution for dApp developers?
Yeah, I mean, that's really who we have to design for. So without getting too much into my background, yeah, we found selling identity solutions or data management solutions to end users or individuals was just like near impossible because people are busy living their lives and they just want things to work. They want to use apps that they love, not because of the tech, but because it does something for them. And so, we thought that we can just sort of make it easier to develop with our technology and sort of provide devs new things. And so, you know, we're really drawing the demand from developers and sort of the end beneficiary is the end user.
And so one of the reasons why you're building ThreeBox is because there was there isn't very good blockchain identity. Can you help explain what is blockchain identity and what's so challenging about it?
Sure. So I would actually make the question a bit more broad than blockchain identity. It's sort of like what is decentralized identity? And that basically just means, regardless of what you use for an individual identifier, whether it's an email address or a Facebook URL or username or a user account number in some system, ultimately those are always managed by a single company, right? Or a single entity or group of entities in a federation that basically have control over this list of users. And if they choose to remove you from that list, they can do that. And you need to request to them to add you to that list. And so basically it's centrally managed. And what decentralized identity is it sort of puts forward this concept of a decentralized public key infrastructure system. So a decentralized way to allow people like me and you to just like register our own account independently and on our own terms and on our own will, and then take that account with us to use that app. So instead of me going to an app and creating an identity, instead now I can register it and then bring it with me.
So the way it's been in the blockchain ecosystem, right? It's been like you create an account on one dApp, you have to create a completely different account on a different application. So they're not very well connected. And so you have sort of these fragmented pieces.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, you leave like identity dust everywhere you go. You interact with an app. That app basically starts cold with you and with basically no knowledge of you. So then you build up a reputation or you build up a data set about you, and only that app has it. And so if you use an app a lot, like you invest a lot of time in using a product, they actually have more information and a stronger sense of your identity. And so ultimately it's about just like leveling that playing field because really end users don't really benefit from their identity and data being centrally captured because, you know, the apps will make an argument that we can provide you a better experience because we have so much information about you. But imagine now if I showed up to an app and I had all of my data from all of my platforms with me, like that's a much better experience for the end user. And so the investment in using other people's products and interacting on different platforms isn't lost. It's actually portable and interoperable.
And the opposite is also true, right? Like the fragmented data, users' data is also very terrible UX. So how does ThreeBox, or how are you guys putting the fragments of data together for end user?
Definitely. And so this was the core challenge that we found. Like ThreeBox, one ambitious goal that we have is we want to make it easy for developers to build apps without a backend, right? And so blockchain is one component of that, but peer-to-peer storage is the second piece. You need on-chain and off-chain components to build an app. And so that's almost like a simple problem. But then we have a second ambition, and that's to enable data to be portable across interfaces and applications. And so the portability is hard because now you basically have to find a way to allow a user to control all of their data, like regardless of database type and regardless of location of that endpoint or public network. You want users to be able to control that data regardless of which wallet or authentication system they're coming with. So I don't care if you have MetaMask or you have Fortmatic or Portis or a custodied solution, like you still want access to the same information. And siloing it along wallet keys is just as bad as siloing it along apps. And so the biggest challenge is finding the correct, it's actually like a technical solution, but the correct abstraction so that way you can let users directly control data without having to put any thought into the compatibility of those different pieces.
And so is this where IPFS comes in? Is 3Box an API to IPFS?
Yeah, so 3Box actually wraps three core technologies. And the first of which I'll talk about is this abstraction that we just chatted about and sort of the main innovation that 3Box has developed. And so that's actually called 3ID. My background has been in blockchain for about 5 years now. I've been working on different decentralized identity systems. And this interoperability piece is really what's called a decentralized identifier. And so, at my previous company, we basically worked on co-founding the Decentralized Identity Foundation along with Microsoft and Sovereign and some other enterprise players. And we really developed a standard for how data's identifiers can be constructed and resolved. So DID colon, then the provider. So in our case, it's 3 because our thing is called 3ID, and then colon, and then your random string of information. And so with that standard, you can do things like encrypt data or sign messages. And so that's the first piece, is this 3ID layer, which basically says, regardless of which wallet or account you're using, you can always generate your 3ID. And then from that 3ID, you can generate your database keys. And that's how you do interoperable encryption and database access. So that's really the identity layer in 3Box. The second layer is OrbitDB. And so OrbitDB is pretty critical to us because it's what enables the data to be structured in a database form in a peer-to-peer network without sort of any centralized database. And it all runs on top of IPFS, which is the third layer to the system. And IPFS, we can go into a lot of detail about that, but it sort of powers the open data systems because it is sort of a data file storage network. On which sort of all of this user data is kept.
So is everything stored on IPFS? And so I've heard you mention that 3Box enables zero backend. Is that what you mean? As in, like, data is only stored on IPFS, or how does that work?
Yeah. So all 3Box data is stored on IPFS. Sort of like we alluded to before. And that makes it, it basically is a public network. So data can be stored and it encodes the routing information. So IPFS more than anything is really content addressing information. So this is like, every bit of data or every object of data stored on IPFS basically gets, converted into this unique string. Deterministically. So if any of that data inside that blob is changed, that unique identifier is also changed. And so that's how IPFS stores data. And then it has routing networks on top of it, like libp2p and PubSub and the DHT, big words, but basically all components of the system that let, someone ask any node for this, IPFS ID, this IPFS object. And the network can just route and magically return that information to whoever asked for it, regardless of where the nodes are being run. And so when you think about open data storage systems like IPFS, they're really enablers for true zero backend apps. Because you know the two versions of zero backend apps that we've seen to date are like, you know, pure dApps. So things that are, you know, just a React front end and a Web3 provider, and it basically interacts directly with the blockchain. And so those are the many of the apps that we've seen to date. Those are in the Web3 space at least. And that's like, oh, I have a decentralized exchange, right? Or, oh, I have a nifty creation platform, or like, oh, I can buy CryptoKitties, right? And so these are basically just a React interface and a blockchain backend for assets. But there's like really no backend that they run for things like user profiles or message data or all of these things. And so that's been missing. But the second type of serverless or zero backend apps we've seen today are sort of like in Web 2, where, you know, the services like Firebase or Parse, basically that offer backend as a service, basically tell developers like, we'll manage all your databases, we'll handle all your cloud storage, we'll provide you with APIs and interfaces to interact with these databases, and you don't have to worry about it. And so really what we wanted to do is like bring these two together and say, if we could make a better version of these backend as a service platforms that actually better fit the needs of dApp developers, by saying like, you know, now not only can you build better apps with new features that you could if you, you know, even did something like Parser backend, now there's systems like that that also fit your promises of decentralization and peer-to-peer, you know, storage. So basically, like, you're not compromising on your ideals or your value proposition just by adding features to your app. And so we fit really in that area. And so, yeah, like, you know, IPFS, without it, like, Threebox could not be would not be possible. Also, without a database system like Orbit, like, Threebox would not be possible. And really, those two technologies alone are not enough to enable user-centric data. And so we needed to add that additional 3ID layer on top and kind of package that up.
So what are some of the costs associated with having things stored on IPFS? And what are there costs associated for these dApps that integrate Threebox, probably because of IPFS? If so, are they the ones that pay for storage?
Yeah, so this is an interesting question. So because we're built on IPFS, you know, I think the ideal solution would be Filecoin fulfilling its promise of being fully functional, you know, storage and retrieval market for data on IPFS. So Filecoin is basically the availability and persistence protocol that, you know, ensures files stored on IPFS remain there and remain available for people to query and read, and they don't disappear. Because every file that you want to remain on IPFS has to be what's called pinned by a service or a node. And so, you know, when Filecoin happens, you will be able to just, you know, kind of submit data to the network and also submit some payment, and the network will maintain it. But right now, to sort of support the ecosystem while that's not functional or maybe will be in some of a diluted form from, you know, what it ultimately can be, there will be service providers like today, like cloud managed instances of, you know, a Threebox database. And providers will offer that to their customers who are used to already paying for these services. So an app developer would pay, you know, a service, a hosting service to make sure that the databases of their users remain available and remain the data in them remains persistent. The interesting thing is it's not as centralized as it seems, because the way that Threebox works is every user in their browser, like when you're using apps, you actually maintain a copy of all of your data. So when you come online, all of your data from the network gets synced to your device, and then you actually have it locally. And so when I'm, you know, interacting with apps and changing my data and doing things where my databases need to update, this all happens locally first. And so that's really important because, you know, if the service ever were to disappear, you know, these pinning services, like users are pinning their own local copy of their data. So whenever a service comes back online, the user will share that data back out with them, and it remains pretty resilient that way. There's also, you know, and now you'll have, you know, a marketplace of providers of hosting in the meantime. And probably even we'll see some end user applications that like you can install on your phone or on your computer that, you know, just like run as a background process. And whenever your browser gets updated, it can like sync to your local node. And even like, interestingly, there's a, so, and then people say like, dApps don't have money or like, how do customers actually pay? Like at what price? And we like to say, by building with Threebox, you basically don't need a backend dev. You don't need to worry about security and compliance of user data. So it's not only like replacing your AWS bill for storage to a different service. It's also saving you the time and money of sort of managing a backend team and actually like doing these things on your own.
So when you in regards to Filecoin, basically what you said is once you know we have Filecoin, the user will pay, but we'll probably see providers and users.
Yeah, so users could pay. Like I think that's the most edge model of this that could work, where users directly pay for their own content to remain available, and then they have no one but themselves to blame if it's not right. And that's like a fair argument, but one with a bit of user experience overhead. Like users are very idiosyncratic and very hard to please, and are resistant to change, and sort of have inertia towards the way the current system works. So adding another thing for people to have to worry about, like they might do it. But I think the easiest path to market is, you know, applications sponsoring the data of their users. And then if the users like do really want to ensure that it's available, and you know, what if that app stops paying, then they could always like back up their own copy and pay. But I think it's like an app pays first, user pays second type of a model.
In regards to the local storage on the browser, is that specific to that machine, or can a user have their data stored locally on two machines?
Yeah, so it's local to every browser that they use, but because we use the IPFS communication networks, so PubSub and from libp2p, and we run JS IPFS nodes, like there's an IPFS node like actually in your browser. You can peer and gossip updates between your two machines. And so your local storage can update even without the broader network.
And earlier you were saying how Threebox provides tons of resources for developers. What are some of these resources that you guys provide?
Yeah, so we actually spend a lot of time worrying about developer experience because again, like if this adds anything, any sort of overhead to development, or to users, it's going to be met with friction. Like it has to be better. Ideally, it eventually ends up being cheaper and all of these things. But for now, yeah, it's like we provide value by making it super simple for devs to like get building with these technologies. So IPFS provides a lot of great infrastructure and some good libraries. Orbit provides some great open source software. We have 3ID. But really what we need to do is like make all these technologies super palatable. So we offer the Threebox SDK, which is like our most popular integration. It allows JavaScript developers. So whether you're building for the web or whether you're building in React Native or whether you're building in Node.js, like you can now use our core platform APIs, which are like identity, enabling you to add accounts to your 3ID from your wallets, profiles, which lets you set or get basic public social profile information like name, image or avatar, like background description, like your basic things. Verify your Twitter account and link that so you add some stronger form of identity. And that's basically like what every app needs. That's like the lowest hanging fruit. It's like, oh, instead of showing hex addresses, you can now show a user's image and name. And you can even add things like ENS to supplement it, but it just makes these things feel more like normal apps. Then we offer a storage API. So this is like apps can just store data in a specific sandboxed area of a user's Threebox in their own database for whatever they want, publicly or privately. So you can, some use cases like MetaMask is backing up a user's wallet information to Threebox, a space, and then when that MetaMask user, which is a browser extension, goes to another browser or goes to the mobile phone, that user now can just sync the data from their Threebox to their new wallet, and there's no break in user experience. So they use our storage spaces as an actual like decentralized local storage alternative. And it, by storing it not in browser local storage, but in Threebox, you know, more decentralized local storage, then it, that same information could be synced across devices and browsers. And yeah, I mean, like there's, we can run through use cases, but storage is so generic that it's like settings, preferences, contacts, like whatever you want, private notes. And then the last API we offer are threads. And so these are basically just streams of information in a linked form from one or many users. And so you can use threads for like public comment systems or, you know, chat rooms or streams of content or information. So just like status updates or public, who you publicly follow on a social network. These can all be threads. But you can also use them for things like DMs, like direct messages between users, because now you and I can, you know, set up an encrypted thread between us and we can privately exchange messages in the thread. Or group chats, like private walls for DAOs, sort of like all these use cases, shopping carts, like all these use cases where you want a feed of information, you want it to be private. And those are really our APIs. You know, there's more things we offer, like from even like making development even easier that are built on top of these APIs. So like we have plugins, right? And that's just simple UI components that leverage our APIs. So we have two for profiles, like a profile hover and edit. So now, you know, you hover over a user in your UI and it shows like a pop-up modal with more information about their profile, like a richer history and reputation, and an edit profile component that lets you have like a little edit profile page on your app and you can just like create profiles for your users directly in your app. Then we have two chat plugins. One's called Comments. It's basically like a decentralized discuss. So on every page or on every object or on each, you know, smart contract even, you can have like a public commenting system. And the third one is what we call Chatbox. It's basically like if you were around in 2016 when Poloniex had the Trollbox, basically that. It's like a chat room plugin that's like really scalable in real time. And you can just like publicly chat in. They're like chat rooms. But the interesting thing is, you can set it so that either when all users go offline, the messages disappear. So you can do even like disappearing chat rooms between people, or you can ensure that they're persistent. And so it's like really flexible and we offer all these different use cases. So and it's really like about any social or interactive feature related to data that's not your core blockchain interactions. And that's like, you can be creative within that realm, but basically you can do all of those things with Threebox.
Does the end user create one Threebox account and wherever Threebox is integrated, they can access their data?
So yeah, so that's one user flow. But like the one that occurs more frequently is if an app integrates Threebox, and you know it's always like they always wonder, do my users have to have a Threebox account to use my app now? And so we made sure that that was not the case. So if an app integrates our SDK, and a user signs into that app, and that user doesn't have a pre-existing Threebox, it's just magically created for them in the background on the fly. And so they really like don't even know, like they do get a little pop-up in their wallet. It's like, this app wants to use Threebox, do you approve? And then it creates it in the background. But so they just kind of onboard as they normally would. And then now they have these data stores in this Threebox account that lets their data sort of just follow them around.
So what has been, I guess, the number one decentralized storage onboarding application has been wallets, like it's where most data is stored on Threebox?
Yeah, so it's been evolving actually. In the beginning, the application that added the most information to the network was our own app that we built to bootstrap the network. So it's called Threebox Hub. You can go there, it's like threebox.io/login, and you can create your Threebox profile. And you know that's an example of a profiles app. Anyone can build the same thing. We just built it first to get data, because we recognized that like the lowest hanging fruit of like basic user experience improvements were like if we can get profiles to be created, so profile data on the network, then other apps would just pull that data and pull it into their UI. And so that was use case number one. So our own app was adding profiles to the network, but now it shifted. Like MetaMask has so many users that like once we integrated with them or with other wallet providers, and they automatically turn on backup in the background, like that's where you get a lot of storage, like both data and accounts. But really we've seen even since then, like now a growth, like an exponential growth in the use of threads. So like to add messaging and chat functionality, to applications, because like, you know, if backup is sort of static, you have like a set of data, it might be kind of large, but it's generally just updates. It doesn't like add, messages are continually adding, like message threads are continuous generation of content in many forms, whether it's like image threads or, comment threads or, you know, statuses. And so, I would say now like DAOs, some social platforms, marketplaces, are all starting to add the ability to let users sort of chat, interact, coordinate, collaborate on their platforms in real time, rather than kicking them off to go to Discord where like maybe the community exists, or like kicking them to Telegram, or like having them, you know, out of bounds communicate with other members on the platform. Now with this new threads technology, like you can keep your users in your app and let them interact in a way either directly or publicly, that sort of overall drives engagement and drives general like perception of quality in your product.
Great. And so we're recording here at ETH Denver. Is there any new development that you have, that you're working on at Threebox, or anything to announce, or anything that you're expecting to see from developers?
Yeah. So about 2 hours ago, we merged a PR to add confidentiality to threads. So prior to today, you could only store data publicly in a thread. As of this morning, now you can create private threads. So like this is pretty massive for us in the use cases for threads. It was like by popular demand, we had to add it. It wasn't easy. We had to do some like cool stuff with Orbit, like writing new access controllers and you know, thinking about what happens when you have a private thread going and then you like later add a new person. Can they see the whole history? There's like a lot of nuance to that, but we're through it and we're excited to see what people build using confidential threads from our Threebox SDK. Another one we were hoping to have live here, but you know, it's a bit challenging to predict exactly when it would ship, but it should be here in a couple weeks. We're coming out with a React Native version of the Threebox SDK. So now we'll be able to support mobile wallets and mobile applications. And I think that like, you know, mobile apps need more than just smart contract interactions. Like that's almost okay for a desktop app in some cases, but if you're creating a mobile app, like it needs to be fun, engaging, or to like do something. And so we've seen a lot of demand from those, from people building React Native or native mobile applications. And so I think between these two things, like we'll start to see an evolution in really like what we think of when we think of like a great Web3 experience. Like it's no longer going to be limited to like, oh, well, this UI is like pretty and simple and it like doesn't get in my way and it's not that clunky. Like, and that's good to like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't even know I was using a dApp. And like, that's where we're going. And, you know, hopefully some of these features get us closer to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And mobile first is definitely a better experience overall. Excited to see what comes out of that. If you guys would like to learn more about how to integrate decentralized storage with Threebox, you guys can go to threebox.io. So now it's time to learn about Michael. Michael, can you tell us a little bit about your background? You said you were you've worked in blockchain for the past 5 years. Can you give us a little context of what you did before that and what you've done over the past 5 years?
Yeah, definitely. So we'll start with the blockchain stuff, probably because that's most relevant. But yeah, so we've been working on Threebox for about 2 years now. It was actually about February 2018 that we wrote the first version of our 3ID identity system, which at the time was called Mewport. A little spoiler there as to where I came from before Threebox, but like, yeah, we've basically been working on the tech for 2 years. And I'm, yeah, like I said, CEO of Threebox, but really, you know, it doesn't mean that much in our team. We all kind of are equal, you know, contributors and participants. I do sort of focus on the product side of things and marketing. So a lot of like, you know, getting to know the ecosystem, really hearing what people want, what they want to build, like how they want to build apps, kind of thinking about like what's missing. And also just trying to communicate that in a way that's as accessible as possible. There's like a lot of technical jargon and garbage out there. And I just try to make it a little easier for, I don't want to say normal people yet, because I don't think we're there, but a more mainstream audience to some of these technologies. So like, I care about UX, care about security, care about, you know, user privacy, self-sovereign identity. Like, these are what I've been passionate about for the last few years. But yeah, before Threebox, I was a co-founder of a project called Uport, which was like one of the first companies or startups, like really trying to tackle ambitious problems on Ethereum. At the time, everyone was just ICOing, doing fundraises. But we saw the blockchain as this like, or Ethereum and smart contracts as this like new innovation in identity, how you can build identity systems, like decentralized identity systems. And so, you know, we started Uport then in early 2016, and it grew to be a big team. Still going today, you know, me, my two co-founders, Joel Tortensen and Danny Zuckerman, both also who also came from Uport, and Zach Ferlin, our first engineer, like we all came from there. So it was really great that we had been working together in a similar problem domain for like a long time. So one, we got to like absorb and sit in the market and like really figure out the nuances and how to bring products to market here, how to, you know, how much to take off with, to bite off with one initiative versus breaking it up into multiple smaller ones. Like, shipping products in Web3 is so hard, not only technically, but because all the nuance of the market. And so not only that, a lot of teams are distributed or decentralized, and like coordination amongst team members is hard. So you can only solve so many problems at once. And luckily we've put together a good team here. And so it's just one less thing we have to worry about.
We're in a Web3 community, right? And it, like, as far as like blockchain reaching tech outside of Web3, we're all like in a rabbit hole together with Ethereum.
Yeah, you could say that.
So what applications are you, or do you see are most promising in regards to this not being a rabbit hole anymore of a, you know, what application that's not your own or one that you worked on are you most, do you see that's most promising?
Oh man, if I could answer this with 100% certainty, I should go into venture capital. But I don't, unfortunately. Like, I think, so instead of pointing it towards like an application vertical or sort of use case that I think will emerge quite organically and quite randomly, you can look at signals. And so some of the signals that I see are like, compared to a year ago, apps are way more dynamic and dApps are way more complete feeling. They're like not just the, you know, the poor user experiences, but like, hey, it works. Like, that's not really the state of dApps anymore. And so, I mean, you could see sprouts of traction and like fit. You know, obviously, I think like DeFi provides tremendous infrastructure. And so I'll say we'll continue to see an evolution in those types of products and platforms and what you can do with some of these money Legos. Sure. I think that's like a given. Will that reach mainstream? I think it really depends on how you define it. Like, personally, I don't go, you know, to my bank account every day. Personally, I don't go to my brokerage account and make trades every day. Like, money is a very critical core use case, but not one that people do as frequently as text messaging your friends or like scrolling Instagram. And while I don't think that it's a direct replacement for those types of products, I do think, you know, if we have more building blocks types of infrastructure, like, you know, without the risk of self-promotion, but we are in a podcast, like with things like Threebox, with things like some of the new authentication systems that sort of just abstract away private keys and sort of handle that for you, you know, with the focus on privacy solutions or payment networks and payment technologies that, you know, don't make you wait 15 seconds for a transaction, I think like, now we're getting closer to creating a coherent application that, you know, now the only thing you need to worry about is, does the product serve a need for people, right? Like, we're still at the phase where it's like, look, I made it work. And we're not yet at the point where like, it's assumed that it just works. And now we get a lot more experimentation of application. Like, we're still in the infrastructure phase of this next period, but I don't think it's like years. Like, I think we are very close. And we may see a breakout app before, you know, a year or two. Someone who can uniquely use the technology set available to them to make something that wasn't possible before. But again, I still think adoption, until we can solve those barriers to user experience and barriers to developer capability, adoption even of quote unquote viral products will be limited almost to the bounds of our current ecosystem.
Yeah, and I think understanding who it's for is very important as well. As like you said, like here in the US, like it's gonna be, or like in, you know, developed countries, blockchain's gonna be in the back end. We don't really care about it. But it's like back to blockchain principles, providing these like financial tools and services. Maybe there's that community that does check these financial products more often, but it's an exciting space, and I guess check back hopefully in a year or two from now, the next ETH Denver. But thank you so much for joining us on This Week in Crypto.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.